You're listening to the free edition of Sweden in Focus from The Local. If you would like to listen to a full-length version of the podcast, as well as an additional midweek episode, please check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade to Membership Plus. Here's this week's free edition.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Sweden in Focus, a weekly news podcast made possible by members of The Local. We're recording this episode on Thursday, the 25th of May, and this week we're going to talk about Swedish lifestyle trends that aren't really Swedish lifestyle trends at all. We'll discuss why the far-right Sweden Democrats are wondering what the EU ever did for Sweden and whether it's time for a Swexit. We'll talk about why some public servants are vowing to defy an element of the government's migration clampdown. And finally, we'll get insight from an expert in the studio on how the Swedish healthcare system works. I'm Paul Omani, and sitting with me here in Stockholm is this week's expert, Anna Gustafsson, healthcare reporter for Dagens Nyheter. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
And we're also joined from Malmö by The Local's Becky Waterton, Richard Orange and Emma Lovegreen. Hello to you all down there.
Hello.
Hello.
So before we get into this week's stories, Anna, can I just ask you to tell listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yes, I'm a reporter in Dagens Nyheter, and since 8 years I'm covering healthcare. And I started to cover healthcare in the Stockholm area. Now I also do it nationally, and also I make some international comparisons as well.
So thanks for that, Anna. And we'll be hearing a lot more from you later and in a bonus episode where you answer some questions from The Local's readers. I just want to say quickly that if you enjoyed this podcast, we'd really appreciate it if you could help spread the word in whatever way you can, from posting it on social media to just telling a friend, colleague or family member about it. And of course, if you're not a member of The Local, please consider joining. There's a link to our offers in the notes. Okay, let's get into what's been happening this week. And we're going to start with a headline in the Huffington Post that stopped us in our tracks. You can become a morning person thanks to this Swedish lifestyle practice. Becky, what is the lifestyle trend they're talking about, and why is it all your fault?
First off, it is totally not all my fault.
It's totally your fault.
Well, we'll see about that.
Absolutely your fault.
Anyway, this supposed lifestyle trend that all of us living in Sweden are busy practicing is jökotta, which we actually discussed in our podcast about this time last year. It is essentially a very old, now very uncommon Swedish tradition practiced mainly by bird watchers and churchgoers. There are not that many of them left in Sweden, where you wake up on Ascension Day morning and you go out into the forest to try and hear a cuckoo. So I don't know how often you guys do that, but I'm personally doing it every morning at the moment. There's not very many forests near me. So all these websites are claiming that Swedes do this regularly between Ascension Day and Midsummer, but I don't think I've ever met anyone who has actually done it. And the Expressen news editor, Sara Mitchell Malm, who tweeted this story, well, that's where I first saw it, she said she hadn't heard anyone do it either. So the reason that you're all claiming that I started this is that me and Shandana, one of our freelancers, did write a word of the day on jökotta last year, because Shandana came across it in one of her SFE classes, Swedish for immigrants classes. But I really doubt that that's where people have got it from, because our article had a lot of really nerdy etymology stuff in. It had like Sanskrit, stuff like that, and lots of rhymes about cuckoos, which somehow mysteriously didn't make it into these kind of fluffy, here's this new Swedish lifestyle trend.
Can't believe they ignored the rhymes about cuckoos.
Mm. Imagine how surprised we'd be if Anna actually practiced jökotta.
Oh, yes. I only heard about it in church connotations, actually, but it's very diffuse for me, actually. I don't know. I couldn't tell. Now I know more than I did before you would
right.
You
yeah,
told
yeah, yeah.
me.
I did actually hear a cuckoo on Ascension Day, I have to say. Several.
Oh, really?
Many. I woke up in our caravan, which is in a wood, and there were cuckoos everywhere to the extent that I couldn't find, I had no idea which direction they were coming from. Or,
you know, it matters which direction you hear it.
It
from,
does,
right?
Hugely. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
The only one I remember is Vesterjök, Ebesterjök.
Well, that's
the west cuckoo is the best cuckoo.
Yeah, but in the south, Söderjök is the worst because that's Döderjök.
Yeah, so as long as none of them are coming from the south, Richard, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
If they're coming from every direction, then I guess it's a bit of a Russian roulette.
So you've written an article about some other Swedish lifestyle trends that have captured the world's imagination, Becky. Can you fill us in on those?
Well, they're less trends that have captured the world's imagination and more kind of tongue-in-cheek suggestions for the next time some poor reporter gets asked to find a funny Swedish word to try and launch as the next hygge or fika or friluftsliv or lagom. So some of my suggestions include testing your endurance by engaging in the Swedish art of supa next midsummer, which essentially consists of drinking copious amounts of brännvin, spirits, until you find yourself dancing around a maypole in a trance-like state, pretending to be a frog. You can heighten your sense of perception in the ancient Swedish art of undvikandet, which is how you learn how to sense the presence of your neighbours in the stairwell, so you can avoid having to acknowledge their existence in any way.
I really enjoyed that one, and I practiced that one.
Yeah, so. Yeah, you're a true Swede. You're a true Swede practicing the art of undvikandet. I mean, they all have to have a catchy name, of course. And then the final one, which arguably actually is a lifestyle trend, is the Swedish art of fredagsmys, where you can hone your skills of patience and restraint by not eating unhealthy food 5 days a week, only to let it all loose and have a hedonistic Friday by eating an entire week's serving of sweets in one day. So I personally can already imagine the books on the Swedish art of super in airport bookshops. I don't know about you guys.
Well, they've already done the Finnish one. This kalsari shenet, which means drinking at home alone in your underwear, which is already had the whole lagom treatment. It's been written up everywhere.
I got that out of the way as a 20-year-old.
It's a bit harder when you have kids.
Brilliant. Thanks a million for those, Becky. And we'll put links in the notes so everybody can read up on the next big Swedish lifestyle trends. One trend that never did catch on was Brexit. You may remember that one. It was the UK's decision to leave the European Union. And some commentators predicted after the British referendum that it would lead to a domino effect, with Europe's populations clamouring to take back control from the faceless, banana-straightening technocrats in Brussels. But that very much didn't happen. Even a traditionally Eurosceptic party like the Sweden Democrats quietly ditched its EU opposition back in 2019. But earlier this month, the party's leader, Jimmy Åkesson, reinvoked the spectre of a Swexit when he wrote a debate article calling for a re-evaluation of Sweden's membership of the European Union, which raises many questions, not least, why now? To get answers on this, Richard had a chat this week with Ian Manners, who's a political science professor at Lund University. We're going to listen now to a short excerpt where he talks about how, even though the prospect of Sweden leaving the EU is extremely unlikely, a referendum could help the Sweden Democrats achieve their goals.
Brexit has taught us that there's a trick up their sleeve, and it's called a referendum. And you may as well spin the drum on a revolver when you play the referendum card. My suspicion isn't that their goal is actually, interestingly, not to leave the EU. It's probably to have a referendum which may present the possibility of leaving the EU, but it would certainly present them as the leading voice in Sweden on the merits of leaving the EU, which puts them closer to their ultimate dream, which is actually government in Sweden.
That was Ian Manners. Richard, you had a long conversation with him and you've written up an analysis piece that we'll link to in the notes. But can you give us a summary of why he thinks the Sweden Democrats want to put Swexit on the agenda? And if we start with the clip we just heard, how would a referendum get them closer to leading Sweden's government?
Well, it might not get them closer to leading the government, but what it would do is make them the leading voice of one side of what would be the biggest issue under debate in the Swedish media. So even if they lose the referendum, which they probably would, it would still be to their benefit. And what he's pointing to is that they'd want to be in a position a bit like the Leave campaign in the UK, which created this new dividing line in UK politics that cut across left and right between Remainers and Leavers. And Boris Johnson then harnessed the Leave vote and won this massive landslide in the 2019 election. And I think even though it wouldn't be exactly the same situation in Sweden, and it's almost certain, as Ian said, it's almost certainly not going to be a referendum on EU membership per se. I think the hope would be that they would just be completely in the spotlight and able to lead the other parties. I mean, they would be the main voice for saying no in whatever referendum this is, because the moderates couldn't say, all the other parties would be split.
I mean, the left party has been against EU membership before, hasn't they?
Yeah, perhaps the only other party would be the left party.
But I can't really imagine the left and the Sweden Democrats. They couldn't be more different.
Yeah, I can't see them campaigning together in the same.
No, I can't imagine that.
No.
But the thing is, the reason it won't be, it's unlikely to be an in-out referendum on EU membership is that the latest polls show that that's extremely unpopular. There's a survey, I think, last week that showed that there's a record number of Swedes who are in favour of EU membership at the moment. I think 68% of voters are in favour and only 11% are against. And that's even the case for Sweden Democrat voters. Like 43% of Sweden Democrat voters say they're in favour of EU membership, which is up from 23% just a few years ago. So the party's own members are now becoming more EU-friendly. So it's a bit weird that the leadership is now going in the other direction. But so I think what the referendum would be, if you read Jimmy Åkesson's article, he says that what they want to do is put a new law through Parliament that means that any significant extension of EU powers would have to be agreed by a referendum by the Swedish people. And I think that's kind of the thin end of the wedge. So what they're hoping for is they can put enough pressure on the government parties to agree that. That seems like not a great deal. But when the EU then goes ahead and does this, then it would force a referendum on the government or the next government. It would be on something like, you know, extending EU powers over defence or something like that. It would be something relatively small, but they would lead the campaign against that, which is what's happened in Denmark. Mm. So in Denmark, there's been this succession of referendums, both first on the Maastricht Treaty and then on the various opt-outs that Denmark got after the Maastricht Treaty so that they would vote for it. And the Danish government has time and time again lost these referendums, and it's always been to the benefit of the right-wing parties that are against it, like the Danish People's Party. And and as you know, the Sweden Democrats have they keep a very close eye on what's happened in Denmark over the last 20 years. So I think they're trying to be in the same position the Danish People's Party has been in when they've had referendums and then get the electoral benefits from that.
And are there any other sort of benefits for the Sweden Democrats of flaunting their Euroscepticism as they see it?
I mean, absolutely. I think it helps them with two main things. One is that they need a new cause, because they've got almost everything they want to do on immigration in the government's current programme. So they're casting around for something else that they can seize on to create a bit of distance between the government parties and the opposition parties on the left. And so they've tried the environment, and I think it hasn't quite worked out for them. And I think the EU is the next one. They're sort of trialing it and thinking, can we build a position around this that can replace immigration as our sort of one of our main issues? So there's that. And then the second one is that they are increasingly realizing, and this is something Ian talked about in our interview in quite a lot of detail, that a very large amount of the program that they got into the TTIP agreement cannot be enacted because of it's already within the domain of EU legislation, or it's controlled by the European Court of Human Rights or the European Convention of Human Rights. So you're very constrained as to what you can do about refugees because of these European bodies. So I think what they're doing is creating a situation where they can present the European Commission, European Union and the Court of Human Rights as a kind of enemy, which is blocking them from doing what they want to do. So they can blame, because they can't blame the government anymore because they're more or less part of it, they can instead blame Europe when everything that they've promised voters can't actually happen. That's what I think is possibly the other benefit that they're looking for. But Ian wasn't sure that any of this would work. he was saying, this is what they're trying to do, but I think they might have to backtrack because no one really wants a Swexit. And no one wants Sweden to leave the European Union. And yeah, he's just not. He was doubtful as to whether they could get their members and build enough of a kind of support movement behind this.
I mean, it's difficult to imagine people looking at the UK after Brexit and being like, yeah, I want that.
exactly.
As a Brit, I can't imagine people wanting to do that. Don't do it. It didn't go well for us.
But one thing that Ian was really interesting on is he said that the example of the UK shows that these things can change really quickly, because there wasn't a big groundswell of opinion in favour of leaving the European Union in the UK before the referendum. And the referendum campaign created that groundswell. And what he says is that he thinks that people in Sweden who are pro-EU should get in really quickly and try to educate the people, the population, as to what leaving the EU or even having opt-outs like Denmark from EU legislation would mean. Because he's saying, you know, look at Skåne, which is the heartland of the Sweden Democrats. I mean, you could almost call them the Skåne Democrats. Its entire economy is based on being across, a lot of its economy is based on being across the bridge from Denmark and the European Union.
And if you, close to Germany.
And close to Germany. And if you had like border controls, taxation, it would be worse than what the UK's seen in Dover. It would collapse the economy in Skåne. It would be a catastrophe. And he reckons that in the Swedish debate, you know, the pro-EU side should be out now and just trying to hammer this information into people's heads, so that if the debate does come, as happened in the UK, the population is already educated. Because as the Remain side saw in the UK referendum, it's very, very hard to educate voters within the short period of a referendum campaign. They just completely failed to get this information through to voters.
It was a really interesting interview, and anyone wanting to learn more about it can find Richard's article in the show notes. Let's talk now about the government's plans to create a much more hostile environment for people deemed to be living in Sweden illegally. According to the TIDA agreement signed by the three coalition parties and the Sweden Democrats, public servants will be obliged to report people to the police if they can't show they have the right to be in Sweden. A lot of public servants, such as teachers, librarians and medical professionals, have objected to what they describe as snitch laws, and many of them say they'll point-blank refuse to obey them. Healthcare workers, as I mentioned, have been very vocal in their opposition. And there's also been an interesting political development on this in the Skåne region this week. Emma, can you tell us what's happened?
So the regional government in Skåne has gone against the government on this and voted that healthcare staff should actually not be forced to report people, that they should be exempt from any laws like this. And all the parties in Skåne, from left to right, agreed on this and criticised the government's proposal, except for the Sweden Democrats. This is interesting because Skåne is run by a right-wing coalition, the Moderates, Liberals and the Christian Democrats, with the support of the Sweden Democrats, just like the national government. So this kind of shows that there's a split between the regional government and the national government, but there's also a split between like the regional government and the Sweden Democrats on a regional level.
Yeah.
And some people are wondering if this could kind of be the first sign of the relationship between the Sweden Democrats and the other right-wing parties kind of falling apart a little bit. And could this happen at the national level eventually too? What's more is that healthcare is run on the regional level in Sweden. So it matters what the regional governments have to say. And Skåne especially, Skåne is home to Malmö, Sweden's third biggest city. It's one of the biggest and most powerful regions. And it's also got its kind of own cultural identity. And it's never been scared of kind of going it alone. And it's hard to do anything really without the support of Skåne, which also tends to have some of the most vocal regional politicians. So you don't want to fight with them because they will fight you back.
Can we bring you in here, Anna? What have you heard from healthcare workers with regard to this planned requirement to report undocumented migrants who need healthcare?
In general, I think healthcare workers are very opposed to this.
Mm.
It's hitting the heart of the healthcare system in Sweden and all the ethical codes of all healthcare workers. And a lot of them see that it's a human right to have healthcare. There's been a few debate articles about this, and that was quite early, actually, just after when this TIDA agreement was newly announced. There's also a contradiction in this TIDA avtalet. On the one hand, we have a healthcare minister. She is talking about that Swedish healthcare needs to be more equal. And at the same time, in TIDA avtalet, you're supposed to report people who are actually in need of healthcare. And also, we wrote articles about this because there are the Association of Doctors. They're two different. They are more the union or the professional,
right?
And that organization, Läkarförbundet, is more conservative. But the Läkarförbundet is also opposed to this, actually. Mm. And then there is a Swedish Association of Doctors that is more. They are more into discussing these ethical problems, and that's what people say when we interview them. That this collides with the principles of healthcare in Sweden. It's a human right to have healthcare. If I can say something about the region of Skåne, I could see two different political reasons why they do this in Skåne. It's one thing is that the Swedish healthcare system at the moment, after the pandemic, is under a lot of pressure.
Mm.
And I think that this might be a sign that the politicians have to stand up for the healthcare workers because they can't afford a situation where there is an insecurity. And another thing is that when they point this to the government, I think people are actually feeling this insecurity about the TIDA agreement and what it will mean.
How do you see this playing out? Will there be legal challenges if this law is brought in requiring healthcare workers to report
undocumented
migrants? Yeah.
Definitely. I think a lot of people, healthcare workers, can't see how this will be.
Thanks for that update on opposition to the government's plans to make the healthcare system a more hostile place for undocumented migrants.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We're going to stay with healthcare now. When we've asked listeners what you'd like us to cover, this is a topic that many of you have brought up. And now we have Anna here to help us make sense of it all. And we asked readers of The Local to submit questions on the healthcare system. We got a really big response, and we're going to go through some of the questions in an extra episode that we'll release during the week. But first, Anna, can you please give us an overview of how the Swedish healthcare system ranks in international comparisons.
In international comparisons, the Swedish healthcare ranks quite high. Mm-hmm. Because we have good medical results, and very, especially in the advanced healthcare, mm-hmm. specialized healthcare, and we have the lowest death rates in the EU, or among the countries with the lowest death rates when you talk about avoidable deaths. And due to early discovering of illnesses or early treatment. And we have high survival in after stroke and also in different kinds of cancer. And this has changed. This has been a quite dramatic change in maybe 10, 20 years. With the medical progress.
And as Sweden climbed the rankings over the last 10, 20 years.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah, that's right. You can cure things, and people also live with cancer today that you couldn't do in like 10 years. And we also have a very few cases of maternity deaths in Sweden. So very safe maternity care. After the pandemic, there were a lot of official reports about this, the Swedish system. And also about the healthcare. And one thing which is on the negative side is that Swedish healthcare, in comparison, has a lack of continuity and for decades are primary care system is insufficient financed, and the infrastructure of primary care is not sufficient to the needs of the people, you can say. And also there's a lack of coordination between different parts of healthcare, different levels of healthcare.
Right. And how does you mentioned a lack of continuity. Mm. How does that manifest itself?
For example, when you ask people, there is annually or maybe every other year, there are internationally surveys about the state of healthcare in Sweden and other OECD countries. And last year, there was a report about primary healthcare. And in Sweden, 25% of the Swedes have a personal doctor. And that is, if you compare to, I think it's like 85% in the OECD countries.
25 compared to 85%.
Yes, I think it's something
who
like
that.
Who have
like a general practitioner, their own general practitioner, yeah.
Yeah, and we only have to go to neighbor countries like Norway. Norway have been very successful in their primary healthcare, and 96 or 97% of the Norwegians have a personal doctor. Mm. So that's kind of a record. Yeah. Now, they have a little problems as well. But the thing is, now when I was on my way here, I actually read, when you dig into this 25% have a personal doctor, maybe it's not as bad as it sounds, because there has been in the last years there has been an increase in elderly people with their personal contact. So you have, and then you have improvements, because I think you prioritize the elderly people in this sense. So you have a little, they are not as, it's not as bad. I think it was like 60-65%. Yeah. It's not always that you have personal doctor, but maybe you have a personal nurse that you have that organize your healthcare, so to say.
Why is the figure so low in Sweden? I mean, what's the organizational reasoning behind it?
I would say there are two main reasons for this. And one reason is that in a lot of countries, not a lot of countries, in Scandinavia and in Britain, also other countries, but the primary healthcare has been organized around general practitioners, and your healthcare is organized by your personal general practitioner.
Yeah.
But in Sweden, the organization is rather around the primary centers. You're not enrolled with your personal doctor. There's been periods when we tried to do this, but this has also always been contradicted by the fact the Swedish primary care is organized in these primary healthcare centers. Mm. And then I think during history, there's been this view that this is enough for continuity.
Right.
But in the last year, when I wrote about this report about the 25% of Swedes have this personal contact, now the authorities say that this isn't enough.
Right. So it is moving in a direction of having a personal GP.
Yeah, it's not enough for reaching this continuity and this sense of continuity. And you also see that because people get... And that was actually a report yesterday from the region of Stockholm, that you see an increase in people's complaints about the waiting times in the emergency rooms, because people go to the emergency rooms in the hospitals when there is too much pressure on the primary care system.
Right. And does this differ a lot between the regions? Because you've talked about how this is, you know, Sweden's healthcare is organized regionally. So are there regions that have a much higher percentage of people having their own GP, for example?
I'm not sure about the regional figures in that sense. I know that are different. There are certain there are areas where you have a better organized system. I was in a very small place in Dalarna, very small place, where you had like 1.5 hours drive to the next hospital. Mm. But there was this primary care station which worked excellently. But they also do everything. And that's one thing people also asked about. I think that Swedish healthcare is very fragmentized.
Yeah.
This goes especially, I think, in the big cities. In some small areas, you have actually better primary care than in the big cities. I think even if you have in the big areas, you have a lot of clinics, you have a lot of supply.
Yeah.
But it's more disorganized.
Right.
It also depends on how much you have privatized, because in Sweden there has been a trend with privatization of healthcare. And that was my idea when I was in Dalarna. In Dalarna, they haven't privatized so much.
Okay.
So when these doctors in this little healthcare system in this village in Dalarna, when they had to have a second opinion or to... Because they made X-ray and everything, but they to interpret this X-ray slides, I think they had this direct contact with Mora, and this was very efficient. People here in Stockholm, they sit hours on ends, and they even have to stay overnight in the emergency room.
Mm. Are there any general conclusions to be made about the privatization? I mean, how does it work? Is it similar to the school system that everything is publicly funded, but it can be privately run?
Yeah, it's similar. It's organized on the same base, you can say.
Yeah.
Mm. Although, and the healthcare was like came a little after. When you did privatized healthcare after the same principles, so to say. Yeah, the school system was the model for this.
Yeah.
In perspective, when you talk about it now and the ongoing debate, it's like, it's easy to think, why did they do this? And yes, you can think, why did they do this? But in this time, there was also a lot of criticism around
the public healthcare system as it was then.
Yes. And there was, in this time, I think it started in the 90s, and then there was a big debate in Sweden, not only Sweden, because Sweden was inspired, not the least from Britain, actually, with the new public management ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you talk about those new public management ideas a little bit? What are they? What does that entail?
I'm actually writing a book about this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In this
Tell
moment.
Us more.
So this is about this privatization of healthcare. New public management is the ideas from the industry, actually, that you want to implement into the welfare state to make it more official. And also to make it more countable, I think. You want to have a more under control to measure things, and also to decentralize so that you can maneuver the system from a distance. But as a result, you have a lot of manuals. Some Swedish researchers call this paperization. There are lots of formulas you need to fill in, and at the negative side of this is that you tend to forget the things in between, so to say. That's probably one reason why we have a fragmentized healthcare system too. That there's different reasons for that, of course, because also medicine is getting more and more specialized, and then you have this subspecialization. But the risk with this is that you get to all these, they are not talking to each other.
Right, yeah, like silos.
Yeah.
We had a schools expert on the podcast last week who talked about how teachers were drowning in documentation. It sounds like it's similar in the healthcare professions.
Yes. Now, if we come back to the general practitioners, that's one of the problems with the general practitioners. Working on this book I'm working on now, I have interviewed a lot of general practitioners, actually. And there are so many people struggling to make this work for the patients, trying to avoid patients to be moved around in this system rather than taken care of. But one, and I should have said that before, but one reason also why it's difficult to get in contact with a general practitioner in Sweden is because there is a lack of general practitioners.
Yeah.
And also when the working situation, it's like when you have a very specialized or more special, because the specialized care in Sweden, and especially the high specialized care, like in Karolinska, is very progressive and has very high scores, also internationally. But when you have this situation with medicine getting more and more specialized, then I also interviewed doctors in Sweden, but also in Norway, the general practitioners say then their role gets crucial. It's crucial for the patients that you have someone who summons up all their...
Who sort of has ownership of all their healthcare needs.
All the threads around the patients.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that, it's very frustrating. It's so frustrating for the doctors. Mm. It's also frustrating for the patients. And it's also expensive for society.
Mm.
And you have this situation where we have, I think it's around 7,000 general practitioners in Sweden. Not all of them are working in the primary care, but the authorities have tried now, actually in the last years, there is an ambition to work around this primary care to make it better and to improve this lack of continuity. In average, the practitioners have 2,400 patients in Sweden, but last year the Socialstyrelsen,
the National Board of Health and Welfare,
yes, they put a figure on what do we want. This is our aim, so to say, and that was 1,100 patients. So now this is like an aim they are working around.
Mm.
When this came, this figure was pronounced or formulated, this is actually a parallel to Norway, because that's the average. They have 1,100 on their list,
right?
In average. Gotcha. Although they also loaded with work in Norway, but at least they have a different situation. They are on a different level in this sense. But and the union and the professional organizations of the primary care doctors in Sweden, they welcomed this, that you got this figure. So now we know what we're working for. And some critics say, oh yes, but how can we reach this? It's like
when there are so few doctors.
Yes, but. The professional organizations, they argue more that, yes, but this is what we need to strive for this. Because we have also this, like in all the Western countries, we have an aging population and people also, at the same time, if we have healthcare system under pressure, on the one hand, that's also because people are aging, people live longer.
Mm.
And they will need, when they live more, they live with their diseases, like I said, with cancer, heart condition, diseases that you would die from like 10, 15 years ago. So we need to have this, we need to work around this, is the view from the professional organizations.
And the politicians, are they going to change it?
Last weekend, there was a conference with these general practitioners, and the health minister, she was there, she was on the conference, and also the opposition, Lena Hallengren, who was the health minister before. They were quite united about this goal. So I think there are hopes, although this has been going on for 30 years that they try to organize the first line healthcare in Sweden. It's a challenge. And at the same time, I think it's hopeful when you see that in Sweden, in Denmark and in Norway, they actually make it work much better than here. So it's not impossible.
And that's all for this week. Thanks to our guest, Anna Gustafsson, who you'll be able to hear more from as she answers readers' questions in our midweek episode. Our panellists today were Emma Lovegrain, Richard Orange and Becky Waterton. Our sound engineer is Rhys Edwards. I'm Paul O'Mahony. Until next time, take care.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's all for this week's free edition of Sweden in Focus. If you'd like to hear a full-length version of the podcast each week, as well as an additional midweek episode, with more interviews and analysis, please upgrade to Membership Plus. Make sure to check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade. Sweden in Focus is a podcast by The Local Europe. Our sound engineer is Rhys Edwards. The publisher is James Savage.